Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 440 of the Box Hard Podcast. 440. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week?
I'm doing great, my man. How you feeling?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Sometimes I have to pinch myself. I cannot believe that we're 440 episodes deep. It is crazy. Myself and you have been, you know, hosting it, co-hosting it, for over 4 years now, man, almost every single week, which is crazy. Anyway, let's dive straight into the review part of the show. We're going to start here last Friday, the 15th of March, at the Madison Square Garden Theatre in New York, USA. Didn't see this card at all, but let me just read the results. Return to the ring for Cleta Seldin. He's now 28-1. Majority decision for him over 8 rounds against Jose Angulo, who's now 16-8. Angulo was down in the first round and the second round, so I don't understand how it wind up being a majority decision over 8 rounds there. I'm guessing he must have won a bunch of rounds in the back half of it, considering he would have lost the first two 10-8, 10-8. I don't know what happened there. A win as well on the card for Reshat Matty. A win as well on the card for Joe Ward. And also the young prospect, Irish prospect, Callum Walsh. Now double figure wins, 10-0. A ninth round TKO against Darren Yelusinov, the brother of Daniil Yelusinov. He's now 11-4 with a draw. Good win there for Callum Walsh, 10-0. That one was for the WBC Continental Americas Super Welterweight title. Moving now to the Rainton Meadows Arena in Tyne and Wear, United Kingdom over here. Thomas Patrick Ward with a successful return to the ring. I think that was his first one back since losing to Otabek Kolmatov. He's now 34-1 with a draw. A points win for him over 8 rounds against Armani Bariki, who's now 14-5 with 2 draws. And now moving to the Results World Arena in Birmingham, West Midlands, United Kingdom. It was live on TNT. I was fortunate enough to be ringside. I was sat in the very first row, so I had a fantastic view here. It was a really fun night. You know, I was very, very, very excited for the card. I don't know if it delivered in terms of entertainment. You know, there were some good fights, but then there were some god-awful fights. Obviously, it's not anyone's fault. It's not like it's the promoter's fault. I think Frank Warren put on a fantastic card on paper, but, you know, a lot of people were arguing ringside, saying he put on so many 50-50 fights that they were all bound to be close fights, all bound to be going the distance. We weren't going to see all these knockouts. I don't know if that was a fair assessment. But anyway, let's get down to it. Going to start here with the very first fight on the card. I think this one went on with about 10 people in the arena. Ezra Taylor, now 8-0. A TKO for him in the fourth round against Prince Nahti, who's now 11-3. He was coming into the fight with 10 KOs in those 11 wins. But like I say, the Ghanaian was TKO'd. He was down once in the second. He was down once in the fourth. He had a point deducted as well in round three. It was a torrid few rounds for him. But I tell you what, if nothing else, the guy was super, super tough. Very, tough guy. And he didn't want to, he didn't want to give up. He didn't come to lie down at all. Also on the card as well, the undefeated Ethan James stepped in with the undefeated Owen Cooper. Ethan James was the favourite with the bookies, but ended up getting stopped. He retired on his stool at the end of round 9, and didn't come out for the 10th and final round. It was for the vacant English welterweight title and the WBO European welterweight title. Ethan James down in the first round from a left hook to the head. Owen Cooper at times couldn't miss with that left hook. At times he did sort of rely on that too much. He was trying to just look for the same shot again and again and again. And I think Ethan James at that point began to read it, you know, started to just pop out the jab and box off the back foot a little bit, didn't really want to engage with Cooper. It was smart stuff from James. He started to claw back a few rounds, but, you know, at one point in the fight, I can't remember where, you know, which round it was, but he did get involved here and there. And when he got involved with Cooper, you know, the power was quite impressive from him. He really seemed to, you know, get Ethan James hurt, and he stayed hurt. And like I say, there was many times throughout those 9 rounds where it looked like Cooper was one shot away from stopping Ethan James, and credit to Ethan for going into the 9th round. But like I say, didn't come out for the 10th and final round. What else did we have? We had Joe Joyce move to 16-2, a successful ring return for him after 2 back-to-back stoppage defeats to Zile Zhang. He stepped in the ring with Cash Ali, who's now 21-3. Cash Ali gets stopped for the first time in his career. A 10th and final round stoppage. I think there was only a few seconds left on the clock. Joe Joyce almost took the distance. Terrible look for Joe Joyce. He came in at his career heaviest, 286.5 pounds. He outweighed Cash Ali by almost 50 pounds in the end. I thought that Joe Joyce would have way too much for Cash Ali. I thought he could stop him in a couple of rounds. It was just going to be a one-sided demolition job. However, Joe Joyce was so poor, and I really like Joe Joyce. I think he's a completely, I don't know why I said the word completely, but he's a really, really nice guy. Really nice guy. I think he's got a very effective style. I've complimented his style many, many times. But I don't understand the idea behind packing on this extra weight and slowing him down. He doesn't have the quickest of hands at the best of times. And for me, the extra weight is just hampering, you know, his ability, really. He doesn't seem to carry the weight well. I thought he would have learned off the second Zhang fight, but he's coming even heavier here. And like I say, at times, Cash Ali was clocking Joe Joyce with some fantastic overhand rights. Thank God Joe Joyce has got such a great chin. Obviously, Cash Ali wasn't able to crack it like Zhang was, or did. But, it was a really lackluster performance from Joe Joyce. I was really disappointed with him. I'll tell you what happened. I was sat there ringside and I was putting the same amount of money on Joe Joyce to win a knockout each round as they were going down. In between rounds, I'm placing the bet. So I go first round, then second round, then third round, then fourth, fifth, sixth. So in the end, I ran out of money. And then he stops him in the 10th round. It was just crazy. He was so poor. Like I say, so slow. When he got caught a few times, he didn't want to commit, like, with you know, like a backhand as well, Joyce. He seemed like he wanted to, you know, kind of use his left hand more. And the jab and the hook, like the lead hook. He seemed, and I wouldn't say worried, but, you know, he looked very ponderous and just looked awful. He looked so beatable. Based off of that, you'd back Dubois to go and beat him in a rematch if they had it. You'd back a lot of heavyweights against Joe Joyce the other night. I need to see the guy shift some weight. He does not look like the fighter he was, you know, prior to those Zhang fights. He was absolutely dreadful the other night. I honestly, it was so bad. And I, like I say, I'm a huge Joyce fan. I'm not one of those people that like to disrespect Joyce. I'm completely not that guy at all. A lot of people don't like Joyce. I don't know why. I really like the guy in and outside the ring, but terrible performance. And he'll know that. I noticed as well, like, you know, the S-Jam boys as well, they seem to have disappeared after these Zhang fights. They were nowhere to be seen. Couldn't see any of those guys ringside. So maybe the Joe Joyce ship is sinking. I don't know. But it's sad to see, because like I say, I think he's a quality guy. And, you know, I don't know. It was just, where's Ismael Salas gone from the corner? He's gone as well. He's with this trainer. I forgot the guy's name. You know, he's a young guy. I remember a few years ago, he didn't know this trainer. You know, he didn't even know. I think at one point he jumped in the ring or something. I could be confusing him with someone else there, actually. But he seemed like he didn't know that you couldn't jump in the ring, that there was too many people in the ring in the corner. I could be confusing him with someone else there, actually. But anyway, the guy doesn't have a fantastic reputation as being a top trainer, and he's gone from Ismael Salas to this guy here. No disrespect to the guy, but, you know, we've got Ismael Salas to compare him to, and it doesn't look good, does it? You know, the rest of the team have all... you know, got smaller as well. So I don't know what to say, but yeah, interesting to see Cash Ali's corner man, former heavyweight, I won't say contender, but heavyweight hard man, let's say, Richard Towers, and he was repeatedly, you know, disrespecting Cash Ali, his fighter, repeatedly, you know, calling him out, saying slurs that I won't repeat on the podcast for explicit reasons, but calling him all sorts of horrendous names, and you could hear him clear as anything from ringside, obviously. Also on the card, Pierce O'Leary with a fantastic knockout in the end, in the ninth round. He is now 14-0, like I say, ninth round KO against Hovhannes Martirosyan, who's now 16-1, I believe, a Belgium fighter, Martirosyan, down in the first round. But yeah, got back up and boxed on, you know, showed a bit of toughness, and he did bring it to Pierce O'Leary. There was a guy sat next to me, I won't say any names because people might know him in the media, but he said, like, this is a tough old test here for O'Leary. And he's a fan of O'Leary, the guy that said it. But he was a little bit worried for O'Leary as the rounds were going on. He felt like he saw O'Leary slowing down. And he categorically said he's not going to knock him out at this point. And then he did, of course, in the ninth round. So a good win in the end. But, you know, a very competitive fight. And I suppose you should expect that, really, getting in there with a hungry, undefeated fighter. Also on the card as well, friend of the show, Zach Parker, now 24-1. A unanimous decision over 10 rounds against Tyrone Zoyga, former world champion, handed only his second ever loss. He's now 27-2 with a draw. It was a bad 30th fight for him. But Zach Parker found himself on the deck in round two. Look, everyone knows that Neil Marsh, who is Zach Parker's manager, is a dear friend of mine. I absolutely love Neil Marsh to pieces. And Zach is a friend of the show. He's been on many times. He's a top quality guy. I got so much love for Zach as well. But, you know, I have to tell it how I saw it. I have to tell it how it is. And it was a terrible, terrible performance from Zach Parker. I honestly thought he'd go in there and smash Tyrone Zoyga. I expected him to do it within a couple of rounds. I thought he would definitely stop him. And I thought he'd probably get him out in the first half of the fight. I couldn't have been any more wrong with that, really. To see him go down in round two was just shocking. Like I say, got caught with a shot, seemed in a heap of trouble. Zoyga, who, you know, people ringside were saying, kind of turned up with a bit of a pot belly, a little bit kind of podgy looking, didn't look like he'd had a fantastic training camp, was really impressive, you know. And we haven't seen him in a fight of this magnitude since the Rocky Fielding loss about 5 or 6 years ago. So like I say, he's been kind of boxing at a much lower level than this. He gets in there and drops Zach Parker. Zach Parker was in a lot of trouble. His legs looked gone. I was very worried for him. Obviously managed to get through the round, weather the storm. And then from that point onwards, just started to really, I noticed it. He seemed to just be jabbing. It's like his backhand, I don't know if he'd hurt it or whatever, but he just seemed to be tapping Zoyga with it. So I don't know if there was an injury there. I haven't heard anything. I haven't tried to hear anything. But like I say, very, very questionable performance from Zach Parker there, who was, you know, making a bit of a name for himself again at light heavyweight. We wanted the likes of Anthony Yard. Well, based off of that the other night, no one's going to favour Zach Parker in that fight. I don't know if he's going to give a damn about that, but it was that poor of a performance. I mean, I think Tyron Zoiga put more of a dent in Zach Parker in one round than Zach Parker put in him in the other nine rounds that we saw. But again, a very lackluster performance. You know, no one was pleased with that at all. Everyone expected much more from Zach Parker, and yeah, I mean, people were calling him the English Demetrius Andrade in terms of his excitement levels. I think that's so harsh because Zach Parker, you know, many, many times has impressed us. He's given us some good knockouts. He's, you know, he's beaten some good fighters. He's stopped people that's never been stopped. You know, I'm a massive believer in Zach Parker, but yeah, I mean, he had a big step up against John Ryder and it went wrong for him through an injury. And then he gets a big step up against Zoiga. And, you know, it's a win for him. And, you know, in some ways, there's a positive that you've gone down on the floor, then you've got back up and won on points. But, yeah, that's all I can say, because everything else about the fight was very much forgettable. But all the best to him, like I say. Got so much time for Zach. Really, really, really good people. And yeah, I'm glad he got the win in the end. Nathan Heaney now 18-0 with a draw. Brad Paul's 18-1-1. Obviously, the fight ended in a split draw over 12 rounds for Heaney's British middleweight title. I wasn't actually scoring it round by round, but I felt that Brad Paul's probably did enough to win the fight. It was a really good action-packed fight, though. Like I say, Brad Paul's started quite fast, started quite strong. Hurt Heaney on so many occasions. I've got to say, Heaney, got to give him massive credit, because I tell you what, his powers of recovery were unbelievable. There were times where it looked like, again, he was half a shot away from being put over and stopped. You know, he's got some strong legs, Heaney, as well. I think that's probably, you know, adding to the fact he can take a good punch. But he showed a fantastic chin. Like I say, the strength in his legs and just his overall powers of recovery definitely saw him through that fight, you know. Definitely helped him weather a few storms from Brad Paul's. But yeah, really impressive from Brad Paul's. Again, I expected a bit more from Heaney. Like I say, Brad Paul's might have nicked it on my scorecard that I wasn't even really scoring. Just felt he did more, you know, throughout the fight. But again, having to actually score it, you know, 12 individual fights, who won that 3-minute fight, who won that 3-minute fight, I don't know. I'd have to watch it back, which I don't think I'm going to do. But it was a really good fight, like I say, lots and lots of excitement. And, you know, Heaney at range was really, really good, very effective. He's got a really good jab, Heaney. It doesn't really get enough credit for it. But Brad Paul's up close, it just seemed to flow better. He looked like the more natural boxer. And like I say, when they were up close, it was Brad Paul's fight. And he's a very fit guy as well. I expected Heaney to have a little bit more in the gas tank late on, but it was Brad Paul's who had the extra gear. So like I say, he'll be feeling hard done by. And one thing I do just want to say as well, there were times in the fight where Nathan Heaney was really, really hurt. And his support, everyone knows his support is crazy. Like, he came out to the ring. Once again, it was, you know, my Delilah, why Delilah from Tom Jones, that classic. But his ring walks are fantastic. But his actual support from his fans in the fight was something that I found very refreshing. And I'll tell you this, Eddie. I don't suppose you know much about Nathan Heaney anyway, but what I'm trying to say is he comes out, his ring walks are crazy, everyone's singing his songs, but when he was in the ring, and when he was hurt, when it looked like he was one shot away from being put out, his fans made so much noise for him. They were shouting his name. It was deafening in the arena. And I just thought, wow. Like, these fans have really given him an extra bit of strength that I think he needed. Sometimes you see a fighter get hurt and all the fans go silent. It's like, oh, damn. But these fans lifted him up in their thousands or however it sounded like thousands. I don't know how many people were screaming for him, but unbelievable for them to, in moments of madness, in moments of danger, they all found their voices at the same time to pull him through.
Yeah, that's an awesome thing, honestly. I don't think I've ever witnessed that. Maybe with Arturo Gatti when he was fighting Mickey Ward, because it was just blood and guts. Everybody wanted to see that. And, you know, in essence, they were basically just supporting the fighters, you know, both. Obviously, there's going to be some people for one and one for the other. But to have that kind of support from your fan group, damn, you know what I mean? Even when you're almost out of there. That is, I don't know if it's unheard of. I mean, now that I think about it, you got to think back in history. How many times have you seen something like that? You know what I mean? Or actually, and could actually tell who they were rooting for. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, that is pretty awesome. You know what I mean? And listen, you know, this is what they say. You know, fans are extremely, extremely important to the sport. That's one, that's how we get paid. And two, it's just support. And knowing that they support you, sometimes that fuels the fire, helps you, makes you become a better fighter. Certain guys are better in front of a crowd, and much better than they are in the gym. So, yeah, it's an awesome thing to hear.
Yeah, in the UK, lower level fighters who are boxing on a fight card, you know, you can usually purchase tickets through the fighter, and the fighter will usually get about 10% of each ticket that they sell personally. So people say to support the fighters, buy it through the fighter rather than buying it through the promoter. And as the fighter goes up levels, they tend to stop selling the tickets themselves because they don't really need to anymore. But he has always, you know, kept doing that. So personally, for this fight here, he claims to have personally dropped off 3,000 tickets for this one night of boxing, all from people supporting him. And that is a crazy thing. That's why he's got such a, you know, a loyal fan base that were there for him in those moments. And I tell you what, I think it's a massive return on investment, because they helped him through that fight, I think, at times. Not to take nothing away from the guy again, but yeah, it was a close fight, but there were some worrying moments for him. Also on the card, Dennis the Menace McCann, now 15-0 with a draw, a unanimous decision over 12 rounds. I think it was originally scheduled to be 10. It ended up being for 12 rounds. He got in there with the undefeated Scouser, Brad Strand, who's now 11-1. It was for the vacant vacant WBO Intercontinental and the Commonwealth Super Bantamweight titles. Brad Strand down in round two. Again, it was a really interesting fight. I thought Dennis McCann was quite impressive, to be honest with you. I thought he was in control for large parts of the fight. Brad Strand, you know, like I say, was down in that second round, was definitely in a lot of trouble. And Dennis McCann, after that, I won't say cruised it, but, you know, he showed Brad Strand who the boss was. I had a guy behind me screaming advice to Brad Strand the whole entire fight, screaming at him to let his hands go. I think Brad Strand kind of, you know, lost his confidence a little bit after that early knockdown. Didn't really want to overcommit. You know, he was punching here and there, picking his moments, but he was losing the rounds. But then as the fight went on, he seemed to take a few good shots from McCann. Maybe he noticed that the power wasn't quite the same or whatever, but he seemed to grow in confidence a bit, and he actually had a few decent rounds late on. But credit to him. Obviously, it was a little bit of a sort of bad blood type of fight. Both men showed good sportsmanship afterwards, which was nice to see. But a good win for Dennis McCann, a dominant win for him. And then, yeah, last but certainly not least, Liam Davies, now 16-0, a TKO for him in the second round against the tough, dangerous Mexican, now 15-2, Eric Ayala. Like I say, it was for the vacant IBO Super Bantamweight World title. Robles, or Ayala, I should be saying, down twice in the second round. We all thought it was going to be a dangerous fight for Liam Davies. You know, the bookies had it close. Liam was the slight favourite, but, you know, the bookies gave Eric Ayala a massive chance. He'd come over to these shores in the past and beat Lee McGregor. Here he was against Liam Davies. And I said it on last week's show. I said, honestly, I think Liam Davies is going very far in the sport. And I really think just because Lee McGregor had a poor night with Ayala, I think Liam Davies is going to do it. I didn't think he'd get him out in two rounds, I've got to say. And that peach of an uppercut he landed was just amazing for the first knockdown. Unbelievable stuff. Really happy for him. It'd be good to get him back on the podcast soon. Like I say, he's a nice guy. He's gone on holiday after the fight. But yeah, I tell you what, that man is a very special fighter. And for me, Frank Warren, you know, I don't know if he realizes, because you know, Liam Davies has tweeted frustration in the past about his lack of kind of promotion. Like, why are they not talking about me? I'm boxing for an IBO world title in a few weeks. Why are they talking about this event and this event, but not this one? Or not my one? And like I said, I don't know if they realize how special of a talent he is, but he's one of their best fighters by far. So I want to see him pushed a little bit more. I think he's a fantastic fighter and hopefully ends up winning, you know, a major world title, not just the IBO. I think he can do it. But like I say, Naoya Inoue, I believe, has got all the belts at that weight. So yeah, it's too hard to keep track of Inoue just flying through the weights, picking up every single belt. But I think, I'm pretty sure Inoue's got all of them, so Liam Davies probably doesn't have too much to do right now. You wouldn't want to put him in with Inoue, I don't think. That is it, though, for that. Moving now to the final two cards. The first one went down at the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas in Las Vegas, Nevada. It was live on DAZN. We saw Floyd Schofield move to 17-0. His opponent, Esturi Suero, now 13-2, was disqualified in round 5. For a low blow. It was repeated low blows. He had a point deducted in round 2, then round 4, and then disqualified in round 5. I actually missed that fight. I did tune in, though, to William Zepeda in the main event, now 30-0, getting the win against the UK's Maxi Hughes, putting an end to his fantastic run and his fantastic rise of momentum. He's now 26-7 with 2 draws, Maxi Hughes. Yeah, William Zepeda, like I say, fourth round retirement. Maxi Hughes didn't end up coming out for round 5. I think that was the right decision, to be honest with you. He was getting battered from pillar to post, and it was quite scary. I mean, it only went 4 rounds, like I say, but Zepeda, every punch he throws is with bad intentions. His gas tank doesn't seem to be a problem. He's such a dangerous, dangerous fighter for anyone in the world at lightweight. I always thought he'd stop Maxi Hughes. I think I said that on last week's show. You know, it's a bit of a mismatch, really. But like I say, credit to Maxi Hughes. Hope he got a nice big payday for it, because that is one of the most avoided fighters at lightweight, and for good reason. Like I say, he was fantastic against Maxi Hughes, picking the right shots at the right times. You know, the power was just so much in Zepeda's favor. Obviously, I said on last week's show, Maxi Hughes doesn't have the power to get that respect from Zepeda. So it was just the demolition job, and he looked a million billion dollars while it lasted. So all the best there to Zepeda, and rest up and return for Maxi Hughes. I'd like to see him in a few more months. I think he's still a player domestically for sure. And then, yeah, moving to the final card to mention, it went down at the Royal Theatre in Castlebar, Ireland. Again, didn't see this card, but I'll run through the results here. Thomas Carty, now 8-0, a TKO for him in round 2 against Pavel Sauer, who's now 19-20. Sauer down twice in the second round there. A loss on points for a friend of the show, Spike O'Sullivan. He's now 31-6. A shock loss there to Sofian Kati, who is now 15-4. It was over 8 rounds, the points win there for Sofian Kati, who I believe only had a couple of days' notice, which is a bad look for Spike O'Sullivan. I don't know what he's going to do next, but like I say, he's a really nice guy. Haven't actually spoke to him for a few years now, but he was a nice guy. Come on the show a few times, good guy. So I wish him all the best, really. And also, of course, the big news was that Dillian White returned to the ring. He's now 30-3. His opponent, Christian Hammer, retired on his store at the end of 3 rounds. He's now 27-11. Didn't see it at all, but happy for Dillian White. But like I say, I think there's a lot of question marks, and there will be forever, I think, moving forward with Dillian White. So I don't know what the long-term plan is for him or what he wants to try and do. And I don't know what he really can do, because like I say, he boxed here in Europe, not in the UK, in Ireland. So he boxed out of the UK here. So I don't know where he can fight and where he's actually allowed to fight or whatever it is. I don't know if there's roadblocks in the way or not, but yeah, I'm happy for him to come back to winning ways if he's clean. But anyway, that brings the review part to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the reigning and undefeated WBA bantamweight world champion. It is, of course, Miss Nina Hughes. Nina, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
Hey, it's my pleasure to have you on once again, Nina. So we last spoke back in May of last year. At the time that we spoke, you were in camp for what we thought was going to be the Shannon Courtney fight. Obviously, the fight fell through. In stepped the undefeated Katie Healy, a big step up for Healy. She didn't really win a round, but she showed her toughness. She took her licks, as they say. Talk me through that fight there, Nina, being your most recent one.
It seems like a long time ago now. But yeah, obviously, Kate Healy stepped in as a late replacement for Shannon Courtney. Yeah, very tall girl. We had to obviously quickly adjust our sparring partners for the last 2 weeks. But yeah, I was confident. I felt like I dominated the fight and won basically every round. So yeah, defended my belt.
Excellent, excellent. And am I right in saying that was a fight you walked out with your sons?
Yes, just my eldest son. My youngest is a bit shy.
Okay. Yeah, I was at the fight. I remember seeing your son walk to the ring with you. What is it like for your son or sons having a mum as a world champion boxer?
Well, he'd walked, like, obviously there are only small hall shows, but he'd walked my Commonwealth belt in, and he walked me in when I won my Commonwealth belt. So obviously being boxing in London, he couldn't come to Dubai with me, but boxing in London, I asked him if he wanted to do it, and he jumped at the time. So I thought, oh, it's a special memory. It's something that he'll always remember as well in the future. And it was nice to do it together and have him walk me out.
No, it's so cool, man, because like I say, you know, being a young boy myself at one point in my life, not anymore, unfortunately, but being that young, I remember it was at school, it was my dad can beat up your dad, things like that, but it must be kind of strange. My mum could definitely beat up your mum. That must be quite funny.
I know, bless my youngest, he's like, can I do it next time now? I was like, oh, it's in Australia. I don't think you're going to get the opportunity to do
this. Bless him, bless him. But yeah, let's discuss that fight there. Let's discuss it. You'll be boxing on May 12th in Perth, Australia, against former IBF super bantamweight world champion Shanika Johnson. It's on that undercard of Lomachenko-Cambosos. Firstly, what a crazy event to be a part of. How excited are you just to be a part of the whole thing?
Yeah, I'm really excited now, especially now it's getting close. It's like finally sinking in deep in camp. I'm honoured to be boxing on such an amazing card. Being on a Lomachenko car, such a legend himself, and obviously in Australia as well, like getting the chance to travel, doing what I love. It's going to be a great experience, and I'm going to make sure I bring that belt back home.
And how did the opportunity come about, Nina? Because obviously there's only three fights announced so far on the actual card itself, but it's a really kind of, it's a good card, but it's a bit of a crazy card, some mad names thrown together.
Obviously since my last fight, I've been patiently waiting for a fight that never happened. Shannon Courtney was offered a couple of fights, another two fight dates with me that she turned down. Matchroom only wanted the big fights against Shannon or Ebony. Ebony didn't want to know. Shannon kept turning down, so I was kind of just left. And then Louis Bella approached me with a great offer and a great deal and this fight. So, yeah, we accepted straight away.
And, of course, what do we know about Shanika? Obviously, you both boxed on the same show last time out. Tell me what you know about the lady.
Not massively loads, but obviously watched her box Ellie Scottney and lose a world title. I think she's a good boxer. It's going to be a tough test. Probably my toughest test to date. But they're the big fights I want. It's a big fight on a big show. And yeah, I just can't wait.
Yeah, you know, I think Shanika, you know, very game fighter, very, very tough, got a lot of heart. She's had to battle through horrendous cuts in the past.
Yeah.
Obviously, the home advantage is in her favour. It's a fight I cannot wait for. Is there any concern, Nina, on your part about the judging, boxing away from home as the champion in your opponent's backyard, knowing that sometimes two-minute rounds can be difficult to score at the best of times anyway?
Yeah, obviously there is a little concern. There always is with the judging, but that's taken out of my hands. I just believe in myself that I know if I box to the best of my ability, that I will get the win. And yeah, I just have to hope that the judges are fair.
And have you got a plan in place about when you're going to arrive there? Because obviously the time difference is pretty major. You're going to get there nice and early and acclimatise.
Yeah, we're 2 weeks before we're going.
Excellent. And obviously I have to bring up the recent social media exchanges. It was quite entertaining the other night about 3 or 4 in the morning, reading the tweets between yourself and Ebony Bridges. There seems to be a bit of needle there now. I don't think that was always there, Nina. Where did it come from?
Well, it was just before I was just trying to get the fight. It was just a bit of banter online. I think she took it to heart. She always said that she was the queen of division and wanted to unify, but she didn't. Well, the unification was there. The fight unification fight was there, but she never wanted to accept it. So that was that. But then, when she lost the world title, she didn't have anything I wanted anymore. So I never said a word, but she started piping up when I posted something about changing my manager. Then she was piping up telling Shanika that she needed to smash me up when I announced my fight. So obviously when she starts calling out Astrid Wet, it's just ridiculous, isn't it? I said to say something.
We'll touch on that in a sec. But yeah, you're right. Obviously Ebony, you know, hasn't boxed since losing her world title to Yoshida, who I still can't quite wrap my head around the fact that, you know, she had 2 weeks notice for the fight. She was coming off a loss just 4 weeks prior, and she goes in there and completely dominated Bridges. Do you think that kind of told us what level Bridges was at, or do you think Bridges just had an off night?
I think a bit of both. I do think she's overrated. I think she probably did have an off night as well, but I think that shows her level as well.
And as you said as well, you know, Ebony has thrown down the gauntlet to fight an OnlyFans adult star, Astrid Wet, for those that don't know. For a former world champion, just one fight ago to do that. It is, I have to say, I'd like to sit on the fence, but it is quite embarrassing from where I'm standing as well.
Yeah, it's just all about money. It gives boxing a bad name. I mean, she's slating me for having a job and earning my money, but I like to live a quiet life. I don't care about social media followers and everything else. And when I retire from boxing, I probably will go back to my normal job, which I'm quite happy with. I know my kids are proud, and that's the way I like. How she wants to make money is up to her. I've got no disrespect for that. But to start slating me for me having a job and boxing and being a mum as well, yeah, I thought that was a bit harsh, but it is what it is. All she cares about is money. The boxing side of it obviously doesn't mean anything to her. I mean, this is where boxing becomes dangerous. How can you put a former world champion that's still active, it's not like she's been retired 20 years, still active against, I don't even know what you call Ashton, a misfit star.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. And, you know, reading back on some of Ebony's recent tweets as well, and I'm not taking anything out of context, she literally said it herself. She said she doesn't give a bleep about her resume. All that she's about is the Rolexes, the cars, the house collection, which was a bit crazy to admit. But yeah, she did also say in an exchange with you the other day that she's probably, the whole exchange is probably going to result in her getting paid 10 grand overnight, which seemed a bit weird. Can't understand how that makes any sense.
She's a bit deluded and she's boasting about having all this money, but like she has, I'm sure she has made loads of money from OnlyFans, but she hasn't made loads of money from boxing like she makes out to be. Like, if I had fought her, she wasn't the big money fight, I would have got paid what I was contracted to for whoever I was contracted to fight. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't have got any extra for fighting her, and she wouldn't have got extra fighting me. And she turned down the fight because she wanted ridiculous money, which she wasn't going to get. Yeah. And so it is all about money for her, which if that's what she wants, but don't go around saying that she's the queen of division and she's going to become unified and wants undisputed when she doesn't want that. She just wants easy fights that, well, just pathetic fights. I mean, fights like that are just dangerous, aren't they?
Yeah, no, 100%. And speaking of, you know, paydays and purses, she did tweet saying that Eddie is offering insults as paydays to women. She has since deleted that tweet because I think it went a little bit more viral. Yeah, she's deleted that one now. I wanted to get your take on that as well, because someone responded, wow, you're biting the hand that fed you. And that was it. She went back and deleted the tweet.
Look, women don't get paid anywhere near as much as men. And I don't know what... I think she was expecting like deluded money. That's never going to happen. I don't really know what to say to that. It's one of them. It'd be nice if women get paid more, but we don't. So
no, that's fine.
And
without obviously overlooking Shanika Johnson in any way, of course we're not going to do that. But what other big fights out there kind of whet your appetite and are makeable, if you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, obviously, if I had a choice, I want Yoshida now because she's got the IBF belt. And then I want Dina for I want to win that and then fight Dina for Undisputed. That's my dream next fight. Obviously, okay. I've got to get through my next one first, but that's the goal.
That'd be great.
I've always wanted to fight for Unification and then Undisputed.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's not a crazy dream. I think it's within reach for sure. I was wondering if you were going to say if an Ellie Skotny fighter the weight above interested you or not at the moment. You just want to clear out your division first.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going for any big fight. If it's a big fight that's going to create a lot of attention, what people want, I want to be in them big fights that people will know. So yeah, I'm more than happy to step up a weight, and I can even go down a weight. I can make the weight below as well. So if the big fights are there, I'm happy to take them.
There we go. Said like a true fighter. Nina, just before we wrap things up, it's great to have you on once again, of course. If you want to close out this interview with any last words to the listeners, you can say whatever you like. The floor's yours.
Lovely. I just want to thank everyone for supporting me along my journey. Big thanks to my new manager, Leon from Tago. So it's a big thanks to all my sponsors that have supported me along the way.
Well said. Listen, Nina, as always, the pleasure's mine. Thank you for your time. Best of luck down under on May 12th, and we'll speak sometime after for sure.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with this, the big news that Keith Thurman has been forced to withdraw from his fight with Tim Sue, citing a bicep injury. In steps the towering inferno, Eddie. It's going to be quite fun, I think, here. Tim Sue, Sebastian Fundora. Again, the date for that is March the 30th, so not too long to wait for that. Fundora was supposed to be on the undercard against a massive punching Ukrainian, Sergei Bohachuk. Bohachuk now is fighting someone else. We're still going to see Rolando Romero getting in there with Isaac Cruz. So Sergei Bohachuk is actually boxing Brian Mendoza. That's the guy who stopped the towering inferno. So that is an interesting one. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good card.
Yeah.
Gee.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to go big for PBC's first pay-per-view on the Prime Video platform. But let's move on because we don't want to spend too much time on that. That's more so for next week. Moving on now to the preview part of the show, though. We're going to start here tomorrow. It's going to be live on TNT Sport at the York Hall Bethnal Green. Let's run through this card. We're going to see the pro debut of Luke McCormack. It's a 6-rounder for him. He gets in with Robin Zamora. We're going to see Sean Noakes, 6-0, stepping in with Marion Wesolowski, who's 4-12 with a draw. We're going to see the return to the ring for Moses Itauma, who is 19 years of age now. He's 7-0. He steps in with Dan Garber, who's 6-2. That's over 8 rounds there at heavyweight. It's always good to see Moses Itauma fight. I'm not going to this card, but I kind of wish I was now. I didn't apply to go, but I like some of the names on this card. Obviously, it's good to see some of the prospects develop and stuff like that. But yeah, Yeah, where was I? Moses Itauma gets in with Dan Garber, like I say. Garber was stopped by Thomas Carty in 8 rounds. That's about the standout name on his record. What else do we have? Royston Barney-Smith, 8-0. Back in an 8-rounder, he steps in with Jose Perez, who's 11-11 with a draw. We're also going to see Willie Hutchinson, 16-1, stepping in with Martin Halban, who is 12-2. It's for the WBC International Light Heavyweight title. It's over 10 rounds there. Good to see friend of the show, Willie Hutchinson, back. I did think he was supposed to be boxing Ezra Taylor, but I don't know what's going on with that. Again, seems like it's all gone quiet. What else do we have? Yeah, Chris Bulk as well on the card. It's for the vacant British bantamweight title. 13-1, Chris Bulk. He steps in with Ashley Lane, who is 17-10 with 2 draws. That should be an interesting fight there. I think it's going to be a decent card, that, for York Hall. Moving now to, again, tomorrow. It happens, though, in the States at the Glass City Center in Toledo, Ohio, USA. Over here, friend of the show, Albert Bell, another guy patiently waiting in line for that WBO super featherweight title. He's 25-0. He's back in a 10-rounder against former world champion Jonathan Romero, who's 35-2. Albert Bell had a good year last year. He'll be hoping to build off of that this year as well. Yeah, it's his first fight of the year. He had 3 fights last year, picking up 2 KOs. He's back against, like I say, former world champion Jonathan Romero, who we've seen get stopped in his last fight to Abraham Nova. That was back in July. So all the best to Albert Bell. Really nice guy. Moving now to the final card to mention. It goes down at the Sheffield Arena in Yorkshire. There's not too much for you to talk about at all, Eddie. So I don't know if I'm going to come to you for this one, but let me dive into it anyway. We're going to see ring return for Liam Cameron. Happy to see him on a Sheffield card. I'm glad that Eddie Hearn's done him the favour and put him on a show. He wanted that. He's back here in a 6-rounder. He's 22-5. He steps in with Hussein Itaba, who's 16-8 with 3 draws. What a best to Liam Cameron. Also on the card should be a decent little dust up here. Sandy Ryan, 6-1 with a draw, defending her WBO welterweight world title against Terry Harper, who's 14-1 with 2 draws. Looked unbelievable since moving up to 154, but she's down 7 pounds. Steps in with Sandy Ryan. I think it's going to be a good fight. Also on the card, another really decent fight, which I think could steal the show. The undefeated 12-0 Ishmael Davis steps in the ring with former British champion Troy Williamson, 20-2 with a draw. I'm hoping that Troy Williamson can get the job done. Obviously, he's a friend of the show. But yeah, last time out didn't look that great against Kevin Agyarko. He's lost 2 of his last 3 fights. And yeah, like I say, he's back here. And it's, well, I'd say it's really a must win, you know, because even though he did really well to rack up 20 wins and all the rest of it, fantastic wins against the likes of Harry Scarf and Kieran Smith and Ted Cheeseman and Mason Cartwright, amongst a few others, he done really, really well to get that far. But you can't really lose 3 of your last 4 fights at any point and then still expect to be, you know, relatively relevant, especially at that type of level, you know. So, yeah, British level, you know, you lose 3 of your last 4. It's hard. It's hard from there. So all the best to Troy Williamson. Like I say, really nice guy. And the main event is going to be an interesting fight. It's for the vacant WBC silver super lightweight title. We're going to see the undefeated Dalton Smith, 15-0, in a humongous step up against top contender Jose Zepeda, 37-4. Like I say, It was a real shocking fight when this one got announced. No one was speaking about it. There were no rumours, and it just got announced like that. Boom. And like I say, Dalton Smith has been ticking all the right boxes. He's a fantastic prospect. There's no question in that at all. But it's such a massive step up. And Jose Zepeda, like I've said on many occasions, has you know, he's the guy that will find you out if you're not as good as you think. And, you know, he may be coming off a bad loss to Richardson Hitchens last time out. And he may be coming off, you know, a stoppage loss to to Regis Progre as well in his last meaningful fight before that. But still, this guy was able to put together win after win after win against the likes of Jose Pedraza, Ivan Baranchik, Hank Lundy, Josue Vargas. You know, this guy doesn't mess around. He's got some great wins. And, yeah, you know, he's very, very, very capable. But it is just a case of what does he have left. He looks like he might be on the slide a little bit. But again, you know, I'm saying he's on the slide a little bit. It's because he's been in the ring with Progre pre-Devin Haney Progre. So it was Progre still looking fantastic. And obviously, Richardson Hitchens, you know. And yeah, he lost on points to Richardson Hitchens. Progre, you know, he lost the fight by stoppage, but it still went late. I tell you what, if Dalton Smith can stop him, it's a massive statement. It is a massive statement. So I'm not sure that's going to happen, but it's just going to be interesting because Dalton Smith's got such an interesting style. We had Raymond Ford on the show last week, and he said one of his favourite UK fighters to watch is Dalton Smith. But like I say, he hasn't stepped up nowhere near this world level before. It's a big step up, but he's such a quality fighter. And I think I said it to Raymond Ford. He does the basics so well. There's nothing flashy about him, but he's a great listener. He's got his dad in the corner, his trainer, Grant Smith. You know, he boxed. He did box in the US last time out, I'm pretty sure. Or no, he didn't box in the US, but he was in the US. I think he was in the US with another fighter in that gym. I can't remember who it was now. But he was in the US. He was involved in a little bit of a scuffle, I think, with someone. I can't remember what happened now. But anyways, yeah, I don't know why that was relevant. It wasn't that relevant. But anyway, should be a good fight. My pick would be Dalton Smith to win on points. I'd be really interested to see the odds on that as well. If he stops Zepeda, it's a massive statement. If Zepeda's not completely done, then he will offer a serious test to Dalton Smith. And there'll be people backing Jose Zepeda. Because on paper, it is not even close. You know, it's a mismatch on paper. But it is just a case of how good is Dalton Smith and how much is left in the tank of Jose Zepeda. Those two questions are the $2 million questions. All the best to both men. Hopefully Dalton Smith can emerge victorious and look good while doing so. But anyway, that brings the preview part to a close. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest. In part two, we did the news. We've just wrapped up the preview part. I've barely spoke to Eddie all show because there wasn't too many opportunities to do so, but thanks to Eddie also. But anyway, that is about everything. It's now time for me to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 440 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A special shout out to this week's special guest, the reigning and undefeated WBA female bantamweight world champion, Miss Nina Hughes. Fantastic to have her on once again. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. There has been one or two pieces of news break whilst we've been recording the show. The first piece of news is that Lauren Cicoli will be challenging Lucas Rosansky for the WBC World Bridgeweight title on May the 24th in Poland. That kind of came out of nowhere. That one to be aired on Sky Sports. It's Boxer, that show there. I don't know if we have the undercard announced just yet, but it's a good opportunity there for Lawrence Okoli. It's going to be interesting to see him in at Bridgeweight. It is a strange one there. Can't say I saw that coming. What else did we have? Sam Noakes to be back in action at York Hall on April the 20th. He's going to be defending his four title belts. It's going to be live on TNT Sport. We're also going to see on that card Henry Turner. He's going to be back in action. He steps in with an undefeated fighter, Bradley Townsend. We're also going to see Andrew Kane back in action. We're also going to see a few other guys on that undercard. I think Aloys Jr. gets in the ring as well. So should be a decent one there for April 20th. Again, that's going to be at the York Hall, Bethnal Green. That is about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you again same time next week.